Caregivers, have you ever felt like nothing is going right? Well, cheer up and welcome to Dave, the Caregiver's Caregiver Radio Program on Health Star Worldwide, where you'll learn how to avoid that dreaded thing called caregiver burnout and how to survive the grieving process. They say that there are only three types of people in the world: those who are caregivers, those who will become caregivers, and those who will someday need a caregiver. Join Dave and his guests now and every Tuesday at 1 p.m. Pacific on Health Star Worldwide as they share practice tips and tools that you can start using immediately to help get you through this day so you can live your caregiver life more fully and abundantly. Now, here's your caregiver host, Dave Nassani.
From L.A., a big L.A. welcome to all my listeners out there in Radio Land. I am Dave, the Caregiver's Caregiver, coming to you live globally through the famous Health Star Worldwide Network. Yes, folks, that's right. I am the guy who's going to help you and guide you through this very difficult journey called caregiving. And we're going to do our very best to help you avoid that dreaded thing called caregiver burnout. Does sound nasty, doesn't it? I will be co-hosting with Adrienne Gruberg today, who is an amazing woman who created the caregiver space, a website, a Facebook page, blog, chat room, you name it. She's got over 120,000 followers. And we are going to interview today a lady by the name of Michelle Castellano. That's Italian, in case you're wondering. And it's going to be a great show because we're going to talk about the topic of, can you have fun doing caregiving? This is a very controversial topic because either you're for it or against it. And we posted this last week in Facebook, and I want to share some of the hot and irritated and offended posts and also the ones that liked it. But our goal is to get people to wherever they're at, because some people have a good position in caregiving where it's not so bad. Some people just have hell on earth. And wherever you're at, we want to try to lift you up to the next level and just to make things a little more tolerable and to give you hope, because without hope, people perish. Anyway, I am your host, Dave Nassani, with Adrienne Gruberg, and this show is to caregivers of every kind. And the one thing we know about caregivers is they are caring, selfless, sacrificial, great qualities, right? Oh, yeah, I forgot to mention they are also very prone to burnout because they tend to put everyone else's needs above their own. Folks, come on, learn a lesson from the airlines. Remember every time you board a plane, you tune them out when they start to tell you that if there's an emergency to put your own oxygen mask on first before you help your child with their mask? And the reason they tell you that is because they know that you will most likely black out if you don't put your needs above the needs of your loved ones. And then guess what? You won't be of any help to anybody with anything. And, you know, caregivers are exactly the same way, unfortunately. Now, we also talk about grief and loss here and the devastating effects it can have on us. It automatically throws us into this other thing called the grief process. Ouch. Unfortunately, folks, there's only one way out of the grief process, and that's to go through the grief process. Can't go around it, over it, under it. Got to go through it. Sorry. But hopefully we can help you through your grief and your loss if you happen to feel like you're stuck. And hey, if this is your first time tuning in, you can learn more about me and my show, my radio podcast, my books, my videos, my blog. I know it sounds like it's all about me, but it's not. It's actually all about you. So go to my website, caregiverscaregiver.com, and take our short quiz that will assess if you are a candidate for burnout. And just for doing that, I'm going to email you my first book, One Arm, One Leg, 100 Words, Overcoming Unbelievable Hardships, absolutely free. Now, I just want to take this moment and thank last week's guest, Richard Barringer, for giving us a great show on, you know, how to make your caregiving experience just a little more fun, a little attitude adjustment, et cetera. This is really part two today, where we're going to talk about, you know, the other side of it. All right, enough of that. Adrienne and Michelle, are you out there?
I am.
Good. Michelle?
I'm here, Dave.
Oh, good. Well, Michelle, I just want to thank you again for agreeing to come on the show. It's such a last-minute notice. I met Michelle just this last weekend and started talking to her, and I said, oh, my gosh, you'd be perfect for today's show. So we're bringing her on. And of course, Adrian, who is so caring and empathetic and understanding, I just need her because I'm so rough around the edges. I'm like spit and she's like polish. Thank you for agreeing to come on the show again and co-host Adrian. I really
appreciate it. You know that.
And she's from New York, in case you haven't noticed. So, and so am I, but her accent's a little stronger than mine. And Michelle, where are you from?
I live in Mesa, Arizona.
Ah, Mesa, Arizona. Well, Michelle, why don't you take a minute or two and just introduce yourself. Tell all these caregivers who you are and, you know, how you got to be where you are today. I think you're a caregiver as well. And you know, we're going to be talking about things about attitude and all of that. But we'll get to that later. Just tell us who you are. Introduce yourself.
Okay. I am the youngest of four, and about 5 years ago, I'm very close to my mother, so since I'm the youngest, everybody says I'm the baby and I'm spoiled, so I've been close to my parents growing up, and they had, they still do, but they had a magnificent life where they would travel back and forth between Mesa and Indiana. 6 months here, 6 months there. So I got to see them for 6 months, and all of my siblings live in Indiana, and they got them for 6 months. About 5 years ago, my mom had a spinal stroke, and she was paralyzed from the waist down. So that kind of turned all of our worlds upside down. She was 81 at the time. Right after it happened, about 3 months, I moved her to Phoenix because I didn't feel like my background is nursing, so I didn't feel like she was getting the care she needed. Obviously, that's the controlling caregiver in me. So I moved her out here to Mesa and put her in rehab here, and she has been living out here since then, and it has become part of my daily life to do the caregiving and help them out and run two households. So that's kind of where I'm at.
Well, let's get into the topic of the show. Last week, I posted something, and it says, and it was just advertising the show. Let me just read it so that you can get the feel of what's going on here, where this is going. Okay, it says, if you are not having fun in your caregiving responsibilities, then you are at greater risk of suffering burnout. So far, so good, right? Happiness is a state of mind and is rarely controlled by your circumstances because there will always be obstacles to our happiness. But we choose how we'll react to our circumstances. Please tune into our podcast show, blah, 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 blah. We'll be discussing, you know, how to have more fun caregiving. Now, obviously, Adrian, you read some of the posts, so yes. you probably saw this a mile away because I'm kind of dense. But we had some responses, and let me just read a few of them.
Sure.
One listener number one, I won't give names here. Says, I've been a caregiver for over 40 years, and it is an honor to be chosen to care for God's aging angels. It is the most rewarding profession there is. It is always fun, but at the same time can be sad. Now, there's someone who actually admitted that it could be fun. Number two, I know it's all in how you look at it. I'm fortunate to have a family sharing the load. My outlook isn't as bleak as it would be if I was doing it alone. The fatigue alone would get me. But then we come to this individual who makes a lot of good points, and that's why we're having a show on this. Caregiving is something we do because we love someone and can honestly say it's never been fun. After 9 years, it's basically another chore. My husband has taken full advantage and now expects me to do everything for him, even when he is perfectly capable of doing things himself. I feel used and like a servant most of the time. My husband is on dialysis. He can do pretty much everything he did before dialysis. The problem is, he acts like a child a lot of the time. I have an easier time getting my teenagers to help me with things. We don't have a marriage anymore. We barely speak to each other. I feel like I'm raising another child. Most of the time, I'm busting my butt, making dinner, cleaning up, and he just sits there on the couch. He hears me getting frustrated, but instead of helping me, he just sits there. And she goes on and on and on. Basically, she starts, you know, obviously she's frustrated. She's got a lot of different issues going on here, but she takes issue at the fact that it can be fun. She goes, I've told him how unhappy I am. He says he cares and wants us to have a relationship again, but when it boils right down to it, he won't do anything to make it work. I'm 39. I feel like I have been stuck in limbo for the last 9 years. it would be different if we had a relationship or he showed me the least bit of appreciation. I don't feel like myself anymore. So let's just start with this. I'm seeing a lot of things going on. Obviously, she's burnt out. She's fried to a crisp, and she's not going to hear, you know, some guy comes along, hey, you can have more fun, you know. So all of a sudden, she's feeling, you know, more guilty, et cetera. So who wants to start with this, Adrian or Michelle? Give me your...
All right. It's an issue of communicating what she needs to her husband. No, it's not fun. And when I got to the point where I started to feel like I was being taken for granted, I had to say something. And I had to pick the right moment, and I really had to consider what I was going to say, because we continue to have a good relationship, but it would be better if he had been doing some of the things that I knew that he was capable of doing instead of relying on me as much. He never really got to that point. He did start to show me much more appreciation, and for that, things changed. I started to feel better about what I was doing because I felt appreciated. Mm. I didn't just feel needed or used. We've made a new connection in a new way. If people really communicate their needs, they stand a chance of getting their needs met. Can't do it without the communication.
So you saw a real, I don't know, would you call it a breakthrough or just...
Well, for us, it was a breakthrough, yeah. Okay. He acknowledged where his shortcomings were. And there were times that I would just refuse to do the things that I knew that he could do himself in the hopes that he would take it from there. Sometimes, maybe he did, a little bit. Mm. But I was also caring for his mother, so... You know, it was a complex situation.
And I just have a couple of tools that I use that really helped me, especially in the beginning. I can only control me and what I think and how I respond. I can't control anyone else, whether it's whoever I'm caregiving for, whether it's my family or my parents. Mm-hmm. So for me, I had to get myself in a good place every day so that what I was giving out is what I would be getting back. So I do a gratitude list, and I know people laugh at that, but it makes a huge, huge difference. If I can get up in the morning and I can look at all the things that I have to be grateful for, and I can look at those and sincerely read through them, not just read through them to check it off the list, but make it a heartfelt that I'm grateful for these things, puts me in a different place. I look at things differently. Even if that other person is doing the exact same things, I'm in a different place. So therefore, I'm seeing things differently.
I am responsible for my own happiness. I can't put the fact that I'm unhappy off on somebody else. If there's anything that I can do to make it better for me. And it is an attitude of gratitude. It's a cliche at this point, but it makes a big difference. Realizing all those little things every morning, I agree, Michelle, is very important to getting through the day.
This other person writes here a state of mind, because I had mentioned, you know, that mm-hmm. happiness is a state of mind. She goes, a state of mind? ? If only it were that simple. When I haven't slept more than 3 hours, or I'm cleaning poop off the floor and my child is screaming, circumstances do matter. Saying it's a choice blames me for not feeling happy. That's so unfair. What do you say to that, girls?
Well, I think we all have to know what our limitations are. For me, I think I can do everything. So I'm going to say I'm probably not the only caregiver out there that thinks that they're the only one that can do it and they can do it the best. I had to come to terms with it's okay to ask for help. It's okay to get help. It's okay to have people just come over to help out without having to pay them or feel guilty that somebody else is doing it. And for me, that was a process to get to. I had to walk myself through that in the midst of being mad and angry that I was the only one doing it. Mm-hmm. But when we can get to that so that you can get more than 3 hours of sleep, again, everybody's situation and circumstance is different, but I know when we seek help, it's most always there. It's just whether we're willing to receive it or not.
I come from a different space where I've had enough feedback over the past few years to realize that people are not always there. And sometimes it's because of what the other, you know, a caregiver who asks for help and gets help versus the caregiver who just manages to complain and affect everybody in such a way that they don't want to have anything to do with them. Some people are caregiving for the elderly. That's one thing. Some people are caring, you know, for their peers, and some people are caring for their children. And your attitude has to be very different for each one of those situations. And there is not always someone there, but it's unfortunate that sometimes that's a problem that's been caused by the person who's really in need of a great deal of help.
You're absolutely right. Here's one that wrote, "Sometimes I want to scream at these so-called pep talks," in quotes. "Rewarding? Maybe. Some days. But when you are the only one in the role of caregiver and there's no help, that is not fun. As with others, I rarely get more than a few hours of sleep. Having someone that can't stand to have me out of the room, going to the bathroom is a challenge. Smiling? What is that? Happy? Okay. One time I was happy. Breaks to take care of me? Please. I just split a gut laughing. Sorry, I'm a caregiver because I'm committed to my husband, and he was a great man." That sounds so depressing, doesn't it, Adrian?
That sounds like reality. Unfortunately, that's the reality that a lot of people face. I'm happy to be able to say that my husband was a great man until he died. I mean, I would always say he's great. He's absolutely great. It's very difficult. And telling people to smile and have fun is not always realistic. To say that it's rewarding, to say that it's life-affirming, to say that you can feel more self-confidence. There are lots of things that caregiving will do for you, but it's not always something that's going to be fun by any means.
So how do we help these people? I mean, my heart just breaks for them. And I'm thinking, okay, you know, some people are just optimistic, and some people, especially when you're burned out, fried to a crisp, and your husband isn't appreciating you, and you're cleaning poop off the ground. I know it's hard to look at the bright side. It's hard to have an attitude of gratitude. I mean, what advice can we give them? We have to say something. We have to support them somehow. Just saying, "Oh, I'm so sorry. I feel your pain." I mean, that just sounds so, I don't know, not enough.
It's not enough. Giving them a platform where they were going to be able to find other caregivers to talk to so that they would feel less isolated was a big piece of it. But I also believe that writing, whether it's just a gratitude list or writing about all of this, if you do it first thing in the morning and write about all the things that are bothering you, get it out of the way. And
that's a good idea.
It frees you up. You start the day with a clear head. That works.
I was going to say the same thing. I used to just go into my backyard and just talk to the fence if nobody else wanted to hear what I had to say, because they truly didn't understand. If you are not a caregiver, you don't understand what it is to be a caregiver or what the sacrifice or what the caregiver's feeling. So the fence didn't care. So talk to the fence. Write it down. I agree with you, Adrian. Get it out some way so that it's not festering in you.
Right.
Is that like talking to the wall? Just asking.
pretty much, yep.
Yeah. Yeah.
As long as you talk to the wall without any expectations.
Correct.
Well, listen, we're off to a great start. We're going to take a quick break and we will be right back. So don't go away.
Caregivers, have you ever felt like nothing is going right? Well, cheer up and tune in to Dave, the Caregiver's Caregiver Radio Program on HealthStar Worldwide. where you'll learn how to avoid that dreaded thing called caregiver burnout and how to survive the grieving process. With roughly 100 million caregivers in the U.S. and Canada alone, it's about one-third of the population. That means everybody probably knows somebody caring for a loved one. They say that there are only three types of people in the world: those who are caregivers, those who will become caregivers, and those who will someday need a caregiver. Mothers of special needs children, family members caring for elderly parents, spouses, siblings, or friends caring for disabilities such as Alzheimer's, dementia, cancer, stroke, heart disease, diabetes, muscular dystrophy, AIDS, autoimmune diseases. The list goes on. Join Dave and his guests every Tuesday at 1 p.m. Pacific on HealthStar Worldwide as they discuss avoiding caregiver burnout and surviving grief. You'll start feeling better in no time as you begin to receive practical tips and tools that you can start using immediately to help you get through the day and to live life more fully and abundantly.
And we're back with Adrienne Gruberg and Michelle Castellano. Welcome back, girls.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And let me just read another one. I'm sorry, but this is not realistic. I am my 88-year-old father's caregiver along with my 85-year-old mother. My dad has cancer. There's nothing fun about that. Not to mention I have my own health issues and I suffer badly from depression. I'm trying to hold it together knowing this will probably be my dad's last year on earth and he's in pain. So no, nothing fun about that. And here's another one. This is my husband's account. I am a woman who has cared for my father since he sustained a traumatic brain injury when I was 12. He needs 24/7 care. I've been the official caregiver for 15 years. I'm 42. I cared for my elderly grandfather for several years while still caring for dad. It's an absurd proposal written with a patronizing self-righteousness. This is going on to say what my response to all of these people were. Let me just read that to you quickly to give you an idea of where they're coming from. Please listen to the show. There's a lot of things you need to be doing to not allow yourself to be taken advantage of. Here I'm talking to the one with the marriage issues. Just because you're caregivers and you love your loved ones does not mean that you should be a doormat for them to walk all over. You have to be strong and put your needs above theirs. This is such a hard concept for many caregivers to get, but if they don't get it, then they will become sicker than the one they're caring for. I'll be praying for you all. Hope you'll tune into the show. For those of you with difficult spouses, you really need marital counseling or therapy for both of you. And if he will not go, then you need to know how to modify your behavior towards him. You need to not have to be abused as part of the caregiving deal. You actually hold all the aces in your hand, and you have more power to control him and his decent behavior than you realize. I know many of you do not want to hear this, but sometimes a facility may mean the difference between a slow death for the caregiver and the best care for the care receiver. But most care receivers refuse to consider this out of guilt or promises made that were unreasonably made and need to be revoked. I'm sorry if this sounds harsh, but we're talking about life and death to the caregiver here. Based on some of your comments, I think I should start a new reality show, Caregiver 911, similar to the reality show of Nanny 911, where a professional comes in and fixes all the things that caregivers can improve upon so that their loved ones don't take advantage of them, and caregivers can learn how to do things that would ensure that their needs were being met first instead of sacrificing their health and well-being. Now, of course, that last comment, a lot of people took offense at because they're saying, I've been doing this for 30 years. Yeah, I know what I'm doing. And, you know, how dare you lecture me and give me simple cookie-cutter type of advice, which, you know, I apologize to them, of course, saying that isn't what I intended. I'm so sorry. But it's hard to remember that we're talking about, you know, so many different kinds of caregivers. As I said in my last spot, I mean, there are so many different things ranging from not too bad to hell and everything in between. And so I'm very fortunate. You know, my wife isn't a lot of work. Now, of course, the first 2 years were terrible because, you know, she was going through the grieving process and it was just hell. And I felt like I was in caregiver prison. And even today, she still can't speak, but, you know, communication is always an issue, even when you can talk. But, you know, you settle down into this new normal, and because of my attitude, my positive attitude, I'm always trying to make caregiving fun. So that's where I got the subject idea from. You know, let it be fun. You know, it doesn't have to be miserable, but I guess I forget that how dark it is for some people. What do you think about that, Adrian?
Well, I think that the fact that you were able to apologize to people online meant a great deal.
I hope so.
I when I read it myself, I was very moved by it because I think you realized that it's not something that was that easy to do necessarily. Not everybody's going to be able to put on the hat where they're happy. If my feeling of we're responsible for our own happiness is we're also responsible for how we let these things affect us. But if we don't have the money to get respite care and or even to put someone in a facility, if they're our child, as painful as that must be, it's going to be hard to hear someone saying that this can be fun for you. To me, the comment about marital therapy, not everyone can afford marital therapy, and God knows not everyone is willing to go.
Yeah.
That's where learning how to communicate. There are plenty of books in the library if you can't afford to buy them, but there are plenty of books on how to communicate and ask for what you need. And people actually do hold all the aces. The caregiver holds all the cards.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause bottom line is you can leave. Most people don't want to and don't want to face the fact that they're doing this because they're choosing to. This is an option. And most people will not walk out, but some people do.
Most things that we do out of obligation really don't get us where we want it to get us.
Right.
You know, even if we could look at why are we doing it, and if it's out of obligation, then, you know, we can only control us. So check our heart. Why are we doing it out of obligation? Do I find out what it is you love about that person still? That gratitude list, I keep going back to that. But do a gratitude list just about that person. Remember why you love them. And find out if you're doing it out of obligation, then how can you make a heart change so that you're doing it for other reasons than just obligation?
Mm-hmm. Is it ever right to do the right thing for the wrong reasons?
I think so. Oh, to do the right things for the wrong reasons?
Yeah, in other words, the motives are wrong, but you're doing the right thing. But you're doing it for the wrong reasons, the wrong motives. It's a tough one.
That's a tough one to answer. I mean, my mother and I did not get along at all, and I became her long-distance caregiver. The reason that I did it was because I promised my father I would do it. Mm. When he was on his deathbed, it was like, let go already. I promise I'll be there for her. Because he was just afraid that no one would be there.
Wow.
And he was able to let go, and he passed very quietly within a day once he knew that I care for her. Now, was that the wrong reason? I don't know.
So, it's amazing to me how people who are dying, you know, can hang on,
mm-hmm,
and not let go, and they can prolong their miserable life because, you know, obviously if they're dying, it's mm-hmm, a miserable life. What causes that they have power over their death?
I wish I knew. You know, they talk about the spirit is willing, and that's the only thing that some people are remarkable.
I think we have more power than we think we do. And when we get to that place, if we have a strong enough will that we have something we need to do, then maybe that's what it is.
You hang
on.
Power
within us that we didn't know we had.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well.
Can you relate to that at all, Dave?
Yes.
Okay.
Absolutely.
And how do you feel about doing the right thing for the wrong reasons?
Well, there's so many different contexts that I can put it in. Obviously, let's say you're a church person, because the Bible talks about this very thing. Even God in the Old Testament, well, being a Jewish person as you are, you know this, that he talks about giving money for the wrong motive is not good. You know, some people give money to show off, to... Mm-hmm. To have the spotlight on them, the best way to give money is anonymously.
Yes.
Don't let your left hand know what your right hand is doing. Mm-hmm. Okay, so how do we bring that over to caregiving now? I've met a lot of people in the comments. I know you've seen comments as well, and in your chat rooms, Adrian, mm-hmm. that say, oh, I hate this. You know, I didn't sign up for this. I gave up my career. I'm broke. I'm miserable. I feel like I'm in prison. Well, why don't you leave? Well, I can't leave. There's no one else. I'm the only one here. You know, so guilt is keeping them there.
Guilt is a huge part of it.
Yeah, and guilt is not good. You know, I wrote in my book a thing about deserved guilt and undeserved guilt. You know, if it's deserved, then, you know, apologize, turn yourself into the police, you know, make restitution, do whatever you need to do to fix it, and then throw it away. It's done its job, and it's over. But if it's undeserved guilt, then you do all that stuff also to get rid of it, but you don't have the luxury of having to apologize or turn yourself in because it was undeserved. You know, we all know that mothers are very good at dispensing undeserved guilt. And Fred Sanford... Elizabeth, honey, I'm coming for you. And that's how he would get, you know, his son Lamont to do anything he wanted. Just grab your heart, look up to heaven, say, Elizabeth. And that's called manipulation. So, you know, a lot of caregivers, when I think of doing the right thing, because caregiving is the right thing for the wrong reasons, I think they're cheating themselves. And Michelle, I'd like you to talk about this because caregiving, so many people says, not fun, but very rewarding, not fun, but very satisfying. You know, people feel good doing it, even though they may be miserable, even though they're not getting sleep, even though they're sick. There's something good that keeps them coming back doing it. Those are the ones that have the right reason for doing it, even though they're doing bad things, you know, not taking care of themselves or so on. But the ones who are truly in it for the wrong reasons, I mean, they need to just get out of it. Isn't it funny that people who need a vacation or need a day off from work, but they don't because, oh, no, I can't. There's no one else working here. My boss would get mad at me. But you know what? When they finally get sick or have to go to the hospital, they just took a day off. So, you know, you can either voluntarily take a day off or involuntarily take a day off. You know what I mean? And I know it's that way with caregivers, too. How's that sound? Michelle, any comments?
Oh, I completely agree with what you're saying. You know, we do things because, again, we think we're the only ones that can do it. And we think that if we don't, then who's going to think badly of me or who's going to think that I'm not a good caregiver, or I don't want to let anyone down. It's a codependent attitude. And if we can, as you said, learn to, even if it's just taking baby steps and learning how to take care of ourselves, maybe we find somebody that can come over for a half an hour and, or maybe 15 minutes, or, I mean, everybody's situation's different, but to get some time to yourself, we all have to take care of ourselves. And we forget that when we're in the midst of chaos and turmoil. We forget that we're important. We forget that time alone, whether it's meditating, whether it's praying, whether it's talking to the fence, whether it's writing, whatever it is, that it's important because it rejuvenates us. And are we doing it for the other person or are we doing it for us? I have to look at myself many times and say, okay, why am I doing this? Is it about me or is it about the other person? I look at it as if it's not about the other person and it's all about me, then I am doing it for the wrong motives. Yeah. So I'm the only one that can change my motives. So, you know, again, it's sometimes we get so busy that we don't want to look at ourselves because we're just in the midst of chaos. But when we don't stop and look at ourselves, that's when we get into burnout because we're not looking at where we're coming from and where our heart is and why we're doing what we're doing.
Yeah, and as I look back on this whole ordeal of people getting offended, I fell into this trap of believing that one size fits all. I know that one size doesn't fit all. I know every caregiver's story is different and unique. And when you're answering a Facebook post, you can gear your advice toward that one. If you think they need counseling or you think they can afford counseling, you can say that. You can say, individually, you can tailor your advice to that specific situation. But when you're on the radio, and your show is about having fun, right off the bat, you're going to offend 50% of the people. The other 50% might get it because, they're in a situation to get it. They're in a good place to receive it. You say, that's great advice. I think I'm going to try that, and because we had a lot of good comments. I just read the bad ones. So I have to be careful when we have a show on a topic to try to narrow the audience of this topic to a certain type of audience. Would you agree, Adrian? Kind of.
Yeah, I do agree. There's a post here. Happiness is merely cosmetic. Joy is
Yeah,
character.
I like that one.
Happiness changes with every circumstance. Joy is found during suffering with your loved one in need. I seek joy rather than happiness. And for me, that was the one that ranked closest to my heart
Yeah.
because I wasn't doing it for me. I wasn't doing it for him. I was doing it for us. And that was what made the difference. It really was for us, the marriage, for what we were and continued to be. So that one particular comment, joy can surpass all of the hardships. The littlest things can just bring you joy.
Yeah, and I totally agree because I should have used the word joy instead of happiness. I would have had a lot less problems because happiness can come and go. You can have a happy day, you can have an unhappy day. But joy tends to stay there, especially if it comes from God.
No,
So good
joy
point.
lingers.
Joy lingers like an aroma. Well, we're going to take another break. And when we come back, Michelle, I'd like you to share a lot of the things that your husband teaches because I know you believe them as well. And I'm experimenting right now. I have this apple that I cut and I left half of it in the kitchen to just be all alone and lonely. And I'm talking to the other one. I'm telling it how pretty it is. And I'm singing songs to it because there have been scientific experiments that when you talk to things and when you're positive, as opposed to being negative and cursing things, that even whoops, sorry, even nature responds. And so this is my little experiment because apparently it's been done before. So we'll be right back and don't go away.
One arm, one leg, 100 words. Overcoming unbelievable hardships is a touching story about Charlene, a stroke survivor. Back in 1996, Charlene was a healthy, normal, very active 52-year-old woman whose amazing talents resembled that of both a Martha Stewart and Wonder Woman. But all that changed when she suffered a massive stroke that left her severely speech impaired and paralyzed on her right side. She met her husband Dave 21 years earlier. They had a wonderful fairy tale storybook-like courtship that soon culminated in their marriage. Charlene had just come out of a marriage where, after 10 years, she received two black eyes and a broken nose by her former husband when he came home high on speed. Charlene believed in no second chances of any kind for abuse, so she left, finding herself all alone in the world with her 5 and 10-year-old daughters, Cynthia Lorraine and Deborah Lynn. She started raising them by herself for the next 2 years. Then fate brought them all together. After falling in love with Charlene, Cindy, and Debbie, their love then produced Rebecca. They all had a wonderful, normal life for the next 20 years. But today, things are very different for everyone. One arm, one leg, 100 words. Overcoming unbelievable hardships is the amazing story of a woman's fight to survive all that life had thrown her way. Everyone who knows Charlene is thoroughly amazed at how she lives day by day, month by month, year by year, and with a smile on her face and hope in her heart that everything is going to be okay. Her faith in God is her foundation in this hope that everything happens for a reason and what doesn't kill her will make her stronger. She inspires everyone that meets her. Best-selling author Lynn Barrington says, "If you think you have it bad, read this book. This is a beautiful, genuine story from the heart. It is inspiring and easy to read. When you finish this book, you'll be able to look at your concerns in a new light." 9-time Grammy and Dove Award recipient, the godfather of contemporary gospel music, Andre Crouch, says, "Charlene just won't let the promises of God go, and she has not let her circumstances get in the way of her faith. She's not just a survivor, she's more than a conqueror." As the Bible states, you will be encouraged by her testimony, regardless of what you're going through. Order your copy today from the author's website, onearmoneleg100words.com. And Dave and Charlene will personally autograph your copy. Enjoy.
And we're back with Michelle Castellano and Adrian Gruberg. Michelle, tell us what you believe as far as the nuclear physicist that you're married to and his unique philosophy in life.
Well, we believe that we have the capability to create our own day. That we either create our day or our day creates itself on us. So I would much rather approach my day knowing that I've created what I want. My belief is that if I can sit with Papa God and I can create my day with him, co-creating, since he created me, then my day is going to go just a little bit better than if I just allow circumstances to create on me. So we start our day where we get quiet and we visualize and go up and sit on his lap and talk to him about what our day is going to look like and what we're going to do. So in creating our day, I start out in a different frequency. I start out resonating in a different place. I use my gratitude list in that so that I can get to that place where I can be operating in a place of joy and peace and love, so that when I have reactions and responses, I'm not responding out of fear and lack and worry. I'm responding out of that fear, peace, and joy.
Wow. So God's part of your equation, isn't it, from the very start?
Absolutely. You know, if I didn't have that, it would make it very hard, because me alone, I can't do it. But we were talking about joy earlier, and the joy that fills us, for me, it has to be his joy. If I depend on anybody else to fill that for me, it doesn't get filled. But he can fill me and fill me more than I need so that I have enough to give out, because I can only give what I have inside.
Yeah, from my experience, and tell me what your experience is, Adrian, but it seems 70 to 80% of the people I speak with do have a belief in God and try to bring him into their equation. I know we didn't hear God too much in these posts that I wrote. That isn't to say that these people don't believe in God or that they aren't godly. They're just responding to a situation and from a very bad place. But what percentage of your listeners, Adrian, do you feel like, you know, have a faith that seems to help them in their caregiving responsibilities? Any idea?
I don't have real numbers, but I know that the people of faith that express that online are clearly in a better place than those without, or who aren't expressing it. I myself, I'm Jewish, but I'm not practicing Jewish. I'm very much a person of my heritage. And my ethic is really my religion. You know, I do unto others, but I was not one of those people who drew anything from God. Mm-hmm. I'm very spiritual, but when I let go of something, it's not as though I expect God to handle it. There's a higher power. Maybe it's science. Mm-hmm. Call it what you will. But
I kind of agree with that. I don't ask God to handle it. What I ask is, you know, he in the Bible, in the Old Testament, it says that he gave us all power, dominion, and authority over the earth. So if he did that, then I have that power, dominion, and authority. So when I ask for him to co-create with me, I'm just asking for wisdom, the things that maybe I can't see or that are out there. He made everything. And it's already made, whether I can see it or I can't see it. So I guess I take him into the equation with me, helping me with wisdom and how I address things. And it just brings me to a higher frequency, a higher place, if you will, within myself when I go and I approach things. And I think you're kind of saying the same thing. You just didn't say that you were talking with God. You
right.
had a spiritual, your higher power
yes.
was feeding you.
Yep.
Yeah, and I believe truly that all things happen for a reason, that there's no accidents, that you know, you can turn those lemons into lemonade. I truly believe from my own personal life experience, in two times in my life, I've lost a great amount of money, which is normally a very bad thing, but they both turned out to be good because I learned like $1 billion worth of wisdom. You know, I wouldn't want to repeat it, but I'm glad it happened because I'm much wiser now, and mm-hmm. I paid good money for that wisdom. And if I didn't go through those trials, those hard times, even with my wife, we would not be as influential and as powerful in our wisdom and in our ability to help people. You know, I wouldn't have this caregiver radio show. I wouldn't be reaching out to caregivers. I didn't even know what a caregiver was, you know. But the Bible clearly states that all things work for good to them that love God. And some people don't know God, but they're very spiritual. And, you know, they're still alive on this earth. And we always hope that they meet God before they die. Because as long as blood is flowing through their veins, you know, He is our Creator, and He says that our sheep know the shepherd's voice. So,
you know, laws were set up from the beginning of the earth. You know, we reap what we sow. We create what we think on. We get more of all of those things. Whether we believe in God or we don't believe in God, they're laws, and they're out there, and they happen.
Yeah, scientifically proved. Einstein was a great Christian.
Correct.
I think where a lot of my negativity in this area comes from is when I get online and I read a comment from a caregiver that's a very, very negative comment, how hard things are and how long they've been doing this, and everything they're saying is reality. And then there's a post right afterwards that's just, like, pray it away. God will make it go away.
Yeah.
And that's not the way to deal with it. God might be able to make it easier, but not necessarily going to make it go away. And
yeah, I agree. Yeah. And we all saw how easy it is to say the wrong thing online, as I just did.
I agree that God can't make it go away like that, because sometimes we're just... Can he? He's omnipotent. He can do whatever. But does it happen all the time? No. But what we can do is we can, as you said, we only control us. We control our attitude. And mm-hmm. unfortunately, attitude is everything. So if we can get to that place where our attitude is better on our own, then good for us. For me, I don't do such a good job on my own. So I employ some help.
Yeah. No, I agree.
But you're the one that's doing it.
Absolutely.
See, so that's the choice. You're choosing to have a better attitude about it, whichever way you can.
Absolutely.
Found a way to make it better for yourself.
Yes. So, Michelle, we're coming up on the end of the show. Why don't you just tell people how they can get a hold of you and what you've got in store for your future? If you have a website or anything you want to share?
I personally don't have a website yet. I'm kind of just going out on that venture. But we do have a book, if anybody wants to check it out. It's called Awaken the Sleeper. And it's a book that talks about how quantum physics and the Bible kind of say the same thing about how we create our day. And it is at awakenthesleeper.com. If you want to check that out, it's also on Amazon. It's an ebook. So if you want to make some differences and see, try it out, that's a great way to check to see if it's something will work.
Give a couple of those scientific experiments, Michelle, that you guys were telling me about, where, you know, with the rice and stuff like that. That's pretty amazing.
Yeah. So the experiments were from a Japanese scientist named Dr. Omoto. He has done quite a bit with water, looking at water crystals, where he took water from the same source and put them in jars, and then wrote words on the jars, words like "I love you" versus "I hate you" versus one was in a place where they heard hard rock music, one maybe just different words, kind of the spectrum between really ugly words and beautiful words. And what they found was, is the water crystal and the structure of the water changed based on what the words were that were on it, on the jar, which is, you know, that's the most interesting to me, because we are made up of water, 80% water, our bodies. So if we can do that to water in a jar, when we speak to each other, what are we doing with the words that we're speaking? Whether I can tell somebody that I'm upset with them without telling them that they're stupid or an idiot or how could they, I can choose different words so that I'm still speaking life and getting my point across, even if I'm trying to get change to happen. So I think with those experiments, what it really shows and what it really says to me is I really need to be careful with my words, so that what I'm speaking is always life into someone, because I can, you know, when our cells are made of water and they're changing, what does that do? It causes disease in our body. So I would much rather be speaking life if I have the creativity to do that when I'm speaking to someone. And obviously he has proven this. Dr. Emoto has proven it over and over and over. He's done the experiments millions of times. Well, maybe not millions, hundreds maybe. the other one that is very, very interesting is there's a cartoon by Dr. Alan Wolf. If you just Google Dr. Alan Wolf, and that's talking about how we have an effect on what we create. And he takes it down to the quantum level. What happens when he shot electrons through some slits, and when the electron was observed, it did what the observer thought that it should, versus when it wasn't observed, it was potentials. There were a lot of different things that could happen.
So it's a very powerful book. I highly recommend it. And it a lot of these experiments and examples are in that book. One last thought before we close. Charles Swindoll wrote something on attitude. And since we're really talking about attitude, let me just read it really quickly. It says, "The longer I live, the more I realize the impact of attitude on life. Attitude to me is more important than facts, more important than the past, than education, than money, than circumstances, than failures, than successes, than what other people think, say, or do. It is more important than appearance, giftedness, or skill. It will make or break a company, a church, a home, a synagogue. The remarkable thing is we have a choice every day regarding the attitude we embrace for that day. We cannot change our past. We cannot change the fact that people will act in a certain way. We cannot change the inevitable. The only thing we can do is play the one string we have, and that is our attitude. I'm convinced that life is 10% what happens to me, 90% how I react to it." So what do you think of that?
I love it. I love that.
Adrian, tell us again, for people who may not even know who you are, what you do and how they can get a hold of you and how they can listen and glean from your wisdom.
Well, the website is thecaregiverspace.org. And
that's caregiver singular, not plural.
Yes, and the caregiver
T-H-E, space. The caregiver,
yes.
Space.
.org. And you can reach me at Adrian adrian@thecaregiverspace.org email.
But you need to spell Adrian.
A-D-R-I-E-N-N-E, the French way.
A-D-R-I-E-N-N-E, Gruberg, yes. G-R-U-B-E-R.
No, you don't need the Gruberg.
Don't need the Gruberg.
Adrian@thecaregiverspace.org.
Got it.
And
and you've got live chats on there. People can actually come and
yes, and forums and mail. You can mail each other and you can pick your own chats up. You know, pick your own people and bring groups together. The potential is terrific.
And your Facebook page as well, the Caregiver Space.
The Caregiver Space.
Okay.
Yep. And there's a great dialogue on there, as you found
there
out.
There is. 120,000 likes, and you did that in 1 or 2 years. Amazing. No, I don't think anyone has ever come close to that. And how did you do that? You just asked people what they wanted, right?
Well, started, we're not trying to sell anything.
Right.
We're just there to help. And sometimes it's nice when it pays off. I love it.
Well, thanks again, girls, both for coming on the show. We really, really appreciate it. And for those of you, we'll be back next Tuesday at 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern. Hope to hear from you. Bye-bye. Thanks.
Thank you for listening to the Caregivers Caregiver Radio Program with Dave Nassani. Join Dave each Tuesday at 1 p.m. Pacific or catch the program anytime 24/7 right here on HealthStar Worldwide.